Great. My name is Andre. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
Welcome to the newcomers, and welcome back from Portland, and the other Portland. Welcome. This is a neat way to spend a Saturday night. I spent the entire day in bed watching YouTube videos. I thought that was. I didn't really think about it. It just happened. I learned all about rebuilding Hemi engines, how to dyno an 800 horsepower dragster. I don't even, own any kind of car that you could work on or anything like that. But nevertheless, it felt like a good use of my time. I don't know why I'm sharing that. I don't know what I'm going to say.
Yes.
But hopefully it's of some use to you. And if not, at least I can be an example of what not to do. And on my good days, I can get with that. And on my bad days, I can't. Let's see what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now in 10 minutes. Well, I used to think I was pretty smart. And I got through school. Granted, I went for theater and music. So not the two most lucrative degrees in the world, but I did it, getting high every single day. I could do math high, and I could not sleep without getting high. Found that out at 14, that was how I was going to sleep, and I couldn't process my feelings without drinking, and I had my first broken heart at 15, and soon fell in love with alcohol, because I couldn't deal with my feelings. But that was, totally okay because I was riding a motorcycle and I like to wear a leather jacket, and it was totally appropriate to smoke cigarettes and drink alcohol and smoke weed. That was just normal. Some of my other friends didn't have to do it quite to the extent that I did. But, when you're in your teens or your early 20s, I mean, there's like a lot of partying as expected, and it was even totally allowed in my house. All my friends came over to my house, and it was appropriate to, party all night. My mom's like, I'd rather have you guys here than out there riding your fucking motorcycles, like killing each other. So it was, pretty condoned, but I knew right off the bat that I liked it more than my friends. And I was okay with that because I wasn't getting... I don't know. My concept of what an alcoholic was is drastically different today than what it was then. I think I had the stereotypical definition, like you got to be homeless, you got to have DUIs, you got to be like a felon, you got to like do crack, things that at that time in my life I wasn't doing. I graduated into, some of those. But the definition of an alcoholic I have now is that you don't have the power to choose how many you're going to drink once you start. And that doesn't mean that every single night you're going to get shit-faced. It just means that occasionally, once a day, twice a week, once a month, you're going to say, I'm going to go to bed. Or what I said is, I'm going to go to bed tonight and get up and make it to work at 6 a.m. tomorrow because I've got a really busy day. Yet what I would do is I'd get shit-faced. I'd go to the Tenderloin and... I'd smoke crack all night, and then I'd skip work. And I didn't know when that night was going to be. I didn't know if that was like a Monday or Tuesday, because on a Monday that would happen, and then on a Tuesday, I'd have my normal. I'd drink most of a fifth, smoke some weed, take some sleeping pills, and I'd make it to work the next day. But then on a Wednesday, I'd try the same thing, and I couldn't make it to work. So it was like I lost the power of choice. I didn't know what was going to happen when I started drinking. And what did happen was I had really bad hangovers, obviously. But I was a trooper, and I'd get up and I'd take a run around the block. I would drink a B Monster because I was convinced B vitamins would help my hangover. I'd hydrate incessantly, before, during, after. And I would practice scales in my car so my voice wasn't so gravelly. I would ice the bags under my eyes on a regular basis. As I was going to bed, I'd put ice packs. I had a special fucking ice pack. Because the bags, towards the end, the bags under my eyes were fucking ludicrous. And I would take vitamins, because that would counterbalance the crack and heroin in my system. And let's just say, at some point it got to be too much. My mom kidnapped me from my house. This is a woman that I brought into AA 8 years ago. I'd had a relapse, and she, you know, kind of really watched me spiral out. But she kidnapped me from my house. I was able to get a day, and that was such a magical thing in my life that I held on to that day. In order to get that day, I had to leave my relationship. I had to out myself to my boss. I left with the clothes on my back. And I repeated that day, identically, what I did that day for a long time, because I've been trying to get sober for a while and I didn't know how to do it. I couldn't figure out how to make it work. I couldn't get the system right. But so I wore the same clothes every day. I washed them. I stayed at my mom's house. I left that relationship. I stayed outed to my boss. I got into a rehab. Somehow I managed to come back in the rooms, which was so much harder this time than it had been before. Found out I had some mental health issues, probably been there for some time, but definitely exacerbated by the amount of drugs and alcohol I was using. And it's been about a year and a half. It's been a bit of a battle. But in my experience this time around, the first 10 months were absolute hell. The next 4 or 5 months weren't that great. But the last 2 or 3 months have been pretty cool. I feel pretty at ease between my ears most days. My emotions feel pretty fucking stable most days. This stuff does work. I find I need to do other things like meditation and therapy and exercise, and I have to really watch my caffeine intake and certain people. I just can't hang around certain people because I'm still delicate and sensitive, and that's just how I am right now. Who knows what I'm going to be like tomorrow? But in wrapping up this last Monday, what I got, a minute?
Yeah, three.
3 minutes. So Monday, my boss announced he's retiring and he's going to liquidate the company, a company I've been at for 15 years. And so I'm faced with this, well, what am I going to do now? In the company I work in, I'm the highest paid employee there, and I have a fair amount of responsibility, and I've been there long enough to be able to call my own hours, and it's really cushy in a lot of respects. And so I have some big fear about what am I going to do now. You know, I don't really have savings. But at the same time, these are like feelings that have popped up. But the bigger feeling that's come in is like, this is a real opportunity to practice the shit that I'm telling my sponsees, you know, like to just have faith that it's working out, to act, to pretend like whatever is going on right now is actually supposed to be happening, as opposed to whatever my brain is telling me is supposed to be happening. And I know it's so, because it's actually fucking happening, like in the real world and not between my ears. And on good days, I can get with that. So I don't know what the next 30 days are going to look like, but between these, you know, moments, you know, fear comes up, call the sponsor, or, you know, fortunately, my sponsors have really been calling me a lot lately, and there hasn't been a whole lot of opportunity to freak out because my time has been taken up except for today, and then thought the best thing I could do in this intense time was to watch YouTube videos all day. And I guess I'm really trying to practice being kind with myself, because I got taught at a really early age that that's not how you're supposed to move. And for me right now, the edge of my recovery is trying to be kind to myself no matter what, even if I fuck up, if I'm doing it right or wrong. And hopefully sometimes that extends to other people. But I've got to remind myself on a regular basis. So I hope you guys can be kind to yourself, I guess, in wrapping up. And thanks for being part of my recovery.
All right, now let's turn the meeting over to our main speaker, Michelle.
I'm your main speaker. Wow. All right. That goes like that? Can just go like that?
Sounds all right. Pretty.
All right, you guys have to look at this. I brought everything. I did, just in case. I brought one of my early big books, and the only thing that I ever did that was unusual in this program is I used colored pencils. You can look. Colored pencils were brilliant, right? Because I could read it and then go over it. And I'm sober. I mean, it's like sort of a minor miracle. And thank you so much. That was really, really good. It was really valuable. I've known I was going to do this for a couple weeks. And so I did. At one point, I made some notes. It's sort of like, we can look at them. The best thing for me, I brought tea. There's tea in there. I have my chip. So I called some people, and thank you for coming. I'm grateful. And actually, I realize you guys are family. Okay, so, and the last time that I shared, I have a home group. I actually have two home groups. And the last time I shared or chaired a meeting at the Late Show, a friend of mine, she said, "They're your people. You can bomb and they'll still love you." So that's what we're assigned to do. It doesn't matter what I think, right? I mean, I have a sobriety date. I have a sobriety date. It's May 11th, 1999. So I've been sober. I turned 19 this year. And let me tell you something. I'm grateful for that. I'm really, really grateful. Not everybody gets it. Not everybody. I get to be here. And in some ways, my sobriety date is the most important thing I have. It's the most important thing I take care of. Right? I mean, I love my dog. I got a new car. I even love some of the people in my life. But I am grateful for my sobriety date. It's not something that I think I should take for granted. And it doesn't mean if you're coming back, welcome. Right? I got here and oh my God, did I need to be here? So you guys sort of get the whole story, right? I grew up in Oakland. Had an older, my sister was 2 years older. My dad left my mom for another woman when I was a newborn. And supposedly the story, right? The story was I was supposed to be a boy. They were going to name me Michael. And it's still 1950s, right? It's like none of that really made sense. But my mom did, I can look at my past now. There's some amount of validity to difficulty in my childhood. Though let me tell you what I did with that. What I did with that was just friggin' crazy. I took care of my resentments. I drank because of my childhood. Let me tell you something. I drank because of my childhood. I mean, I couldn't let go of the past. So when I got to kindergarten, went to the same school for my whole life, I got nicknamed Moosehead. And there I was, a little girl, right? I'm a little girl. I don't want it. And Moosehead, I mean, that they called me Moosehead. And it turned out that this kid, he had a crush on me, right? But I couldn't. I was big. And it basically what that did for me, there was no place for me to go when I was a little kid. I mean, there wasn't. My mom worked all the time, and my mom would come home. My sister would make her a pitcher full of martinis, and she would drink them. There wasn't. I look like my dad. I mean, I'm not, whatever this is, right? I look like my dad. I talk like my dad, whatever, right? But there wasn't any place for me to go. I did spend a lot of time in the library at the elementary school, and I read all the fairy tale books in the world. But I didn't talk to the librarian, I was a pretty messed up little kid. Right, I had a big fantasy life, but I was a pretty messed up little kid. I was in fourth grade, and one of the teachers, and I don't think she meant this on purpose, but she called me Moosehead in front of the class. And I was like, disaster, and it wasn't like, I don't know that many of us know how to process our feelings, right? And I remember, I went home, and my next door neighbor, she was over that evening playing, and my mom came home, and I had made up this story about the teacher, right? Because I acted out, and she brought me to the front of the class and chastised me, and I made this story up to my neighbor girlfriend, that she had, sworn at me. She said, "God damn it," to me, and I told my mom that, too, and my mom hit the roof. And that wasn't in the plan. And this lady, this teacher, she got transferred to another school. And I got I never told the truth. To me, it was also like if I told the truth, my mom wouldn't love me anymore. So I grew up, you don't tell the truth, right? And by fast forward, I've done a lot of messed up things in my life because I didn't know what to do, you know? And that's not to excuse it, not to excuse it at all. I have caused a lot of damage in my life. I mean, I've stolen a lot of stuff in my life too. I was sort of, even my first addiction, my mom gave me diet pills when I was in like fifth grade or something, and they didn't work, so I didn't become this cute little kid. My sister was beautiful. They entered her into baby beauty contests, and she won them, right? I mean, so here you had me, and whatever reasons, right? I mean, I was not comfortable in my own skin. I lied, and I remember with the kid across the street, we stole a pack of Jell-O and ate the whole Jell-O and lied about it, but our faces were all red. So fast forward, right? You know, I get to high school, and high school is better. High school is better because not everybody, you know, knows that nickname for me. And I made friends in high school, right? I got my first boyfriend in high school, and there were some like popular girls. There were two, I was friends with them. They were like the most popular girls in my class. And this is the 60s, right? So or the late 60s and 70s. I graduated in 72. So these two girls, they were really wonderful, and they decided that they would work hard during the week and they would reward themselves for the weekend by dropping acid. Right. So and that was a great idea. I'm going to reward myself on the weekend by dropping acid. I never, ever succeeded in doing that. Never once. Right. There's a lot of drugs in my story. OK, there just are. And you know something? Apparently, there's an old lady, some little old lady in Brooklyn. And now I can be the old lady in Berkeley, Oakland, right? But it's and what she said was, honey, you might not have started out on alcohol, but you will end up there. And I believe that, right? Two things, believe a bunch of things now. But, you know, progression of the disease, right? I experienced that firsthand. So, and my options are going to leave me, right? My options sort of disappear. Right? So, and alcohol does the job. Alcohol does the job. You know, which is, for me, I always drank to get drunk. Always drank to get drunk. Let's go get fucked up. You know, let's go get wasted. You know, if you want to get to know somebody, you got to get drunk together. Like, who does that? You know, nobody does that. That's not real. Is like a big truism, but it cost me a lot to get here. I was 47 years old when I got here. So, and we're not done with my drinking and using, right? So, because I have long, there's all these steps. And it's sort of like step one stories. I like step one stories a lot, if that's what they are, if they are step one stories, right? And I think we're really, really blessed to be here. We're really blessed to be here. Because I couldn't stop on my own. So I'm drinking and in my case using. And I always drank to get drunk. That was just it, you know. And I was a numb little kid. So I stole things, X, Y, Z. I worked in a small family in a business that for a lady. She gives me her keys. Go out, honey, go get something from my car for me. It happened to have the keys to the business on it. I was probably 16 or 17. There happened to be a hardware store next door. I walk right into the hardware store. Irene needs a set of keys, right? And I get a keys to this business. I mean, I did stuff like that, right? And I believe that it's really, really true. I believe you can't harm somebody else without harming yourself, right? I just think that's true. Before this, you know, I'm going to do a couple things. So I went through the music scene, right? I learned how to, so high school, and I had friends in high school. They did not drink really like I did. So when I graduated from high school, and I got to see a couple people recently, just last weekend, right, that I went to high school with, and it was really nice to see them and actually make amends. They technically weren't on my ninth step, but I did make amends in the sense of like, man, we put people through a lot. We make a lot of wreckage as we go along. And some of that I learned about in the fourth step. But I went through the punk scene. I went sort of like through the Berkeley scene. Then went to the punk scene. And I don't like this word necessarily, trading down, right? But I went to high school with you, say. But you didn't drink and use like me, so it was sort of like bye. And I went off to make new friends, right? And I pretty much did that my whole life. So I learned how to IV. when I was 21 years old from Jimmy, who was at Mabuhay High Gardens. And that was like, oh God, I had arrived, right? I mean, I loved that, you know? And there's, you know, you can, we have all this stuff that we decorate it with, right? I had identity as drug addict, or I'm hip, slick, and cool, right? I'm an artist. I mean, and I did. I graffitied a lot. I walked around San Francisco with a little bag of, like, spray paint and graffitied things. And, I mean, I wrote a lot of poetry, you know, a lot of really probably bad poetry. I read all of Jack Kerouac, read all of William Burroughs, read, I mean, you know, X, Y, Z. But I had learned how to IV. All right, so, and some of that, you know, I've robbed a few places, I've stolen things. So, and technically the rule on that is don't go through the roof. You don't go through the roof. You know, you get caught when you go through the roof. So, I stole drugs from my friends, right? One was a dealer, one was just a friend. She showed me where she kept her drugs. I broke into her house and stole them. It was always sort of like, and there's, so my older sister, right? So my sister was 2 years older. Straight as can be. I think one time she almost smoked pot, but didn't really inhale. And she was totally this normal drinker, too, you know. But, and she also learned, I mean, she knew my whole story. I could tell her everything. So I'm in my, like, mid-20s or something, and she goes, and she had been studying to be a nurse, right? But, and she goes, and I told her, because I was like sort of strung out and got, you can get unstrung off of heroin or opium by IV acid a lot, you know. I mean, you just divert yourself. But so I tell her about that, and she goes, honey, needles are for sick people, right? And it's true, syringes are for hospitals. They are for sick people. And that worked. It worked pretty good, you know, all that sort of like realism. So I do have spaces of clean time. I got a really good paying job. It doesn't mean that I knew how to have relationships. I did not know how to have relationships. I didn't know how to tell the truth to anybody. So by the time, you know, getting here, there's a bunch of ingredients, I think, for us getting here. Right? So whether or not I'm clean or sober, you know, my train is going downhill. Right, my train throughout my life is going downhill because I don't know how to process my emotions. I don't know how to be okay in my own skin. And I have all this guilt, shame, and remorse. I have a lot of guilt, shame, and remorse. And it's really, I mean, I've stuffed it all away, right? But I have a lot of guilt, shame, and remorse. And I feel bad about myself, right? And I mean, there's a space and time. I painted Jasco on myself, right? I mean, which is like, and then you wash it off eventually. But then the other really weird thing, and I'm going to stop on step one stories, right? But I know a lot about narcotics, okay? And the opium family, right? The opium family has three alkaloids. One is inert. It doesn't do anything. The other one is morphine. You can IV morphine, right? That's the point. The other alkaloid in the opium family is codeine, right? You cannot IV codeine. You can't. Do not put it directly into your veins. Don't do that, right? So I did that. I did that twice. So yeah, it's like I didn't, and I don't know how long the space of time it was, but it was like, I think I did it twice. One, because I was really into IVing, right? You know, but the other thing was I didn't know if I was high afterwards, right? And basically I have like I have two heart attacks on my EKG. So, which is, that's what happens. You don't get loaded afterwards. So. Somehow. The other thing I did, I lived in a like big Victorian that everybody was sort of communal and everybody had their own apartments. And I'm still drinking. I mean, man, okay, Saturday morning when I'm not at work, right? A thing of orange juice and a full thing of the cheapest champagne you can buy, right? That's gone by 10 a.m. That's just, you know, I mean, that's not normal. I think one time I like walked around with like a half a pint of Courvoisier in my purse, and that wasn't efficient enough. So immediately we graduate to buying a pint, right? Because it's just more efficient. But I go through, so I want to IV something, right? And I go through, I go through this whole house. I go through, it's like four different apartments, right? And I knew all the people. And I find in the people downstairs, and it was easy to get their keys because everybody knew each other, right? So I go through and I find this little vial. It's a pill bottle of brown powder, right? And I taste it, and it's not really bitter like it should be, but it's brown powder, you know? So I IV it, right? It could have been anything. In retrospect, what it probably was, because this guy was, he was all into virility. I IV'd ginseng, though. But it could have been anything, right? And what I'm saying, right, you know, so by the end of my drinking and using, I mean, I've been strung out more times than I can count, right? You never think, you know, oh, gee, I'm going to pick up, let's go get strung out, right? I mean, I've started drinking contests and won them. I drank at Brennan's a lot, right? The steps were awesome for me. They were absolutely wonderful. So I get here, right? One way or the other, I get here. And that's like, I mean, I really needed to be here. So I'm strung out on heroin again. I'm buying it at the Mission, right, 24th and Mission, because that's the cheapest place to get it. Though I can go to, I know how to buy heroin on Eads. I know how to, like, 92nd and D. I know how to do that in Richmond. I know that, you know, XYZ and, like, crack. I had a crackhead boyfriend. I had a couple of them. So, I mean, it's like, it was, I mean, I'd like to be if it was, like, meaningful. One of the ways, and I know it's sort of, I do want to say this. So I had a crackhead boyfriend, right? And he was like, he took my pickup truck too and didn't bring it back. I was so disappointed. But he also gave me gonorrhea. You know? And it's actually, so the stuff, and not to, okay, I've peed on myself too when I was drunk too. But, you know, so gonorrhea, the stuff, I've known my doctor. I knew my doctor, Dr. Tolbert Small, for like 30, I mean, I just knew him forever, right? And you couldn't miss, I mean, I couldn't ignore it, right? I could not, it was green, the stuff that was coming out of me. So I go in to see him, and I'm like covered, right? I mean, I've been through my arms to my hands to my feet. Like, so I'm covered in tracks, right? And Candace, who was the nurse practitioner, they don't say anything. And I tell her, it's okay, I'm shooting heroin, but I'm tapering off. He's like, okay, you know, here, you know. And then he draws me, he tells, come on over, you know. He's at his desk, Dr. Small, and he goes, I still have a brother that shoots heroin, right? And that was it. That's all they did. So there wasn't any like, oh, you terrible thing, or oh, you got to stop. I ended up driving up. In fact, I talked to Kathy in Cheshire today. I couldn't slow down. I couldn't. There was even this time towards the end where I needed a new drug. You know that song? I needed a new drug. I mean, you know, I was too scared to like take acid, you know, because I'd never had a bad trip. Besides, I didn't know anybody anymore that sold acid. So the only thing I had access to was heroin, right? And I'm selling everything. I'm selling everything, doing whatever I can to like come up with my habit. And I'm out of veins too, right? Which is just, that's really annoying. So people that would be at work, they'd come up to the counter and these guys, right? These guys is like, God, you've got beautiful veins, right? I mean, I didn't say that, but, and people were going like, you're too skinny, you know, and I wasn't taking a shower anymore. And finally, you know, one of the things I did, I drove up to Oregon, right? And I've always had a dog. Somehow or another, I've had 3 Akitas in a row. So I took, Bethy was the first one, and I drove her up to Oregon because Kathy and Cheshire, who's like dear, dear friends of mine, I drove up there, and I had gotten together like a 5-day supply, right? And I think I'm going to go up there and detox, right? I don't tell them anything. I don't tell them I'm really strung out. I don't tell them a thing. So they had their daughter was 7 years old at the time. I get up there, I probably have my first shower in like weeks, right? And their water pressure is not real high, so I complain about that. They're out and about, and I end up fixed. On the way up, you can have a 5-day supply and you can do it in 1 day. Not a good idea. So I immediately, I leave all my works out on their living room table. Right, you know, and I don't even know that. I don't know what I'm doing. And they take me, Kathy is like a cocaine addict, she was, so she takes me to my first meeting. It didn't work, right? It was the first thing. It's just like she went into automatic pilot. She knew what to do. But I was trying, you know. There was this road ahead of me to, like, figure out how, you know, I was so tired. I was tired of me, right? I was tired of, like, never getting over anything, right? I mean, I just never got over anything. So long story short, I went to MPI. So I got stuck. I got put into MPI, got myself to the emergency room, right? They wheeled me over. They gave me my first shower in, like, 6 weeks, and it hurt. It was like, ow, ow, ow. But they didn't make me wash my hair. And then I learned how to eat food there again. I remember eating toast, which for the first time, it was like chew, 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 chew. I mean, they actually detoxed me on Buprenex. At the end of my drinking, I was drinking a half a gallon of cheap vodka every 2 or 3 days, right? Mostly like 2 days. And I drink it like to get it down to my toes. And I was doing whatever else I needed to do. And I wasn't taking a shower anymore because I couldn't find the sense of ease and comfort. I was really busy. I was really busy looking for the sense of ease and comfort, right? And I couldn't find it anymore. I wanted that thing of like, oh, I'm okay. I was so not okay. So I got to go to MPI, and they detoxed me. And they kept me for 36 days, not your 28. I got to stay for 36. They wanted me to go to like a long-term treatment program, but I had my dog. I had Bethy to go back to. They let me out on a Monday, I believe it was, and that Friday we had, like, put together, I had no money, right, so I put together my state disability papers, and then I get out on Monday, and I'm going to meeting a day, and I go to this meeting on Wednesday night. It was an NA meeting. I didn't think I qualified for AA, though they gave me a big book. And I liked the big book. The big book was interesting. But so this woman at this meeting, she shared, and she had like a 7-year-old daughter with her, and they were squatting in this burned out house, which is what people did below East 14th Street. I had $65 to my name. I smoked cigarettes, so I kept 15 and I gave her 50. So, and it's more, I mean, I hemmed and hawed, you know, it's like, but here, you need this, right? And it wasn't like I didn't have consciousness, right? I wasn't snappy. Right? It wasn't like I was thinking. It was more, I mean, because I just, you know, I had been so like, but I was like, okay, I'm going to try it. You know, it wasn't clear and snappy, but I was like, I'm going to try this. So that happened on a Wednesday. And on Friday, my first state disability check came in. Then other things that happened was like, I walked through my back door, right? And I was like, gee, I'd like a martini. Like a couple things. I knew that I hadn't been drinking martinis for a long time. Then right after that, gee, I'd like a martini. I've never had a martini in my life, right? I mean, so why, I asked myself, why am I not thinking of 5 martinis? 5 martinis I can do, right? You know, and then we'll tell you about the rest of the night. I've never been a normal drinker. But that thing of like, oh, there was all sorts of stuff that just happened, you know, that was like, whoa, I mean, it got my attention. Things got my attention, right? And it was more like the God of my understanding got my attention, which I called it WOG, okay? Doggy WOG, like Muffin Head, Muffinini, Potato Boat. I had all these nicknames for Bethy, right? And I was this close to committing suicide, right? I had a little .22 handgun. I mean, but I had to kill Bethy first. Right before then, I would have OD'd, right? So I didn't do that, and I ended up getting clean, and I have this dog, right? And I'm taking her everywhere, sometimes it doesn't translate entirely, but I'm out at the rabbit field, right? There's this place, and I'm out with, like, Bethy and then her best doggy friend named Lucky, right? And there used to be all these jackrabbits out there. It's along 880 in between High and 66th Avenue. It's this big open field. So, and it's like dusk, it's twilight, and I'm smoking a cigarette, and we're out in the middle of this field, and they're down in front of me, and I said, gee, I mean, wouldn't it be nice if there was a bunny for you, you know? And I swear, I can't, like, it was like, and then because there were two dogs, right, it was like boom, boom. And two bunnies popped up, like, from here to there. I mean, it was sort of like, I've learned a lot, right? I have learned a lot being sober. One, I knew I wasn't normal when I got here, right? So I knew I needed to work the steps, right? And this process of the steps has been something where I actually do believe, I have faith today that the God of my understanding is going to take care of me better than I can take care of myself. I absolutely believe that. It has come true for me. I've worked all 12 steps, right? And I have, it's 13 minutes?
Yep.
Oh, we have a lot of time. Okay. You know, I knew I wasn't normal. So, you know, working the steps, welcome to you guys that are new, right? My life did not work before I got here. Did not. Not even remotely worked. I mean, I have some successes made. And I have this space of time after. I actually have a parental suicide. My mom committed suicide. I was 27. So 26, 27. I was the last one to talk to her. So, I mean, there's stuff that happens in our lives, right? So I have the space of time, too, where I'm going to fix myself. So I'm, you know, I did an IV every day. I didn't drink a half a gallon every day, right? For like, I mean, I have a progression of the disease. And for me, alcohol and drugs always worked, right? I mean, it's like they're my solution. They are what make me feel better. So, you know, I've done different kinds of therapies. I actually got rebirthed. Like, I've been rebirthed twice. Nothing ever worked, right? So this process of working the steps has worked. It has worked. So long story short, I mean, step three, I learned the third step prayer. I had had glass syringes in my life since I was 21. You know, and they're, I mean, I really thought they were beautiful. And it, not that I use them every day, but I knew exactly where they were, right? Pack them away, put them in the basement, they're safe. So I couldn't finish my third step and keep those. So it took me like an hour. I'll just keep one. I'll keep a box. I'll just keep what, you know, X, Y, Z. So I got rid of all my, you know, got rid of them or gave them up to the program. The fourth step, it took me a while. I was crazy when I got here. I was crazy. I was full of, yeah, but this, yeah, but that, yeah, but, yeah, but. My biggest plan was I was going to sell everything I own, right? And it just didn't include Beth, you know, this sort of like, so it's like I was going to sell everything I own and move to an Asian country, right? Because, and I don't speak anything but English. Barely that. I wanted to be an opium addict, right, in an Asian country where I wouldn't have to talk to anybody. Good idea. And then, so I'm watching movies, right? I go to the video, and I get this movie. Really, there's all sorts. I ate a lot of cake when I first got sober, and, you know, cookies, and, I mean, I watched TV all, you know. I needed downtime. So I get this movie, and it had Claire Danes, and I think maybe it was Kate Beckinsale. And these two girls, they go to an Asian country. They aren't drug addicts, but it still holds true. They go to an Asian, and this was, they go to an Asian country, and they get arrested for drugs. And it's horrible, right? And I'm like, boom, okay, that plan doesn't really hold water. It is so good to become educated, you know, or to be, you know, teach me. Teach me what I need to know. Teach me what I need to know. Which has really been, this is a we program, right? I understand the thing about Beyond Human Aid, right? I did Beyond Human Aid, and I really liked Beyond Human Aid. Because if you tell me something's wrong with me, you know, I'm not going to listen to you. Right? There have been people in my life that loved me, right? People in my life that loved me. One of the, I thought that 40 minutes would be way too long, right? So I had a friend, Ramona, right? She was 86 years old. And I get, when I was drinking, I was her only friend, all her fans. She had very little family, and she was back in Wichita, Kansas. But she lived around Fruitvale and MacArthur on Champion Street. And I knew her for a long time, and she knew me. And I have keys to her apartment, and she had showed me where she hid some money. So I'm strung out, right? And I know she's out. I take her the keys, and I go in, and it's like, even at that point in time, it's like, I'll put the money back. like when, right? So I steal $300 that she has hidden. I steal $300 from this 86-year-old woman. Aren't I hip, slick, and cool, right? And I promptly use that, and I'm all glad for it. But even in my brain, so I get sober, right? And I'm like... And I was telling sponsors then, you know, it's like, I can't tell Ramona I'm a heroin. I mean, I can't. She's 89, you know, she's 86. I can't tell this woman I'm a heroin addict. She won't understand. So they get me to take her to the grocery store. I'm supposed to make amends by taking her to the grocery store, right, and doing stuff. And it's not working. It's not working. She's pissed. And like, and it's not working. So I save up $300 and I take her aside. And this is not, I mean, this is my, I had read the big book, right? What I'm saying is like, it's good to have a sponsor, but you can do this program. It was a mail order book. So I make an appointment with Ramona. I tell her, it's like, I can still picture it in her apartment, right? Ramona, this is what's been going on. I've been strung out on drugs and alcohol, and like I stole $300. And she like, first thing, right after, without a beat, missing a beat, she goes, honey, I never got strung out on alcohol and drugs because I had my younger brother to raise. This from this 89-year-old woman, right? Didn't miss a beat. Honey, I never got strung out on drugs and alcohol because I had my younger brother to raise. That's partly she's a normal drinker, right? But it's like, I mean, so we end up talking for like 2 hours or whatever it is, right? I mean, and by the end of it, I'm crying and she's crying. And I go, how can you forgive me, right? How can you forgive me for doing this? And she goes, she looks me in the eyes like, honey, I love you. There is something about this program, right? If I get out of the way, the God of my understanding has saved me, right? I called it WOG. I called it Fluffy. I did not, you couldn't have paid me to say the word God when I first got here, but I listened, right? And somehow or another, I think there's all these ingredients that we need, right? We come here and we are beat up. We are beat up. We are beat up by alcohol and drugs, and that's the only place it goes. If I'm not a normal drinker, I don't expect it to do anything else but beat me up, right? And I'm going to like, okay, that's okay. I'm okay, right? I mean, and if we get to get sober, right? I know I'm sober because of the grace, because there is grace. And the other funny thing to me about the God of my understanding, you know how like girlfriends sometimes when you're growing up in high school, like, oh, she looked at me funny, or she like, you know, they're laughing at you behind your back or something. The God of my understanding has always been kind to me, has always been kind, has always been loving, has always made whatever this little message that I'm supposed to be learning, has put it into a package where I get it. You know, I get it. You know, so some of that now is giving it away. I'm really grateful for the big book. I'm really grateful I have the opportunity to be human again, because I wasn't being human. So, and you know, whatever comes along so far, I've had stuff that's happened that was difficult, right? But so far, I have not had to take a drink behind it. So. Okay? Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.